Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Here we are. Adventures in Truth Podcast. So to all our lovely listeners and followers, blessings to all of you. And I'm hoping that you have noticed a shift in energy as the calendar went from one year to the next. And some of the places that I've journeyed into exploring and taking a listen to or talking about the intensity of 2018 will let up a little bit. As the whole numerology thing has changed by just the digit going from an 8 to a 9 puts us into a 3-year instead of the year that we were in. So, time to settle in a little bit and attend to some of our life goals and a growing year rather than trying to just keep up with everything.
Hey, quick question. Are we a year into this now or not?
I think we are. Yeah, definitely are. I've had a sense that we started in the fall last year, and we're now fall plus. So, yeah.
Did we actually start in the fall? Okay. I'm trying to remember. I seem to remember the holidays being a hurdle.
Yeah, definitely. So, yep, here we are. So for our first,
I'll have to go back and check for sure. But
first podcast in 2019. Prior to hitting the record button today, Jim and I spent a little bit of time considering what we might talk about and what source, spirit, the great white buffalo, all that amazing energy that we can get inspiration from, is getting us on this idea of energy system awareness, as well as intentions. I think Jim had the idea of talking a little bit about getting out of this idea of resolutions and calling it something else or going in a different direction with that. He likes to talk about state shift. We've actually had quite an in-depth podcast maybe 6 months ago about state shift. So if this is a topic that seems like we're already well into, it's because we are. And there is some background info that can go be looked at. I'm just guessing maybe 6 months ago would be a good place to start. So anyway, here we are. January 2019. And we're looking at this idea of growing in our awarenesses and wanting to show up differently. That's my idea of each. The value in turning the page on a calendar from one year to the next is, what did I learn? What am I teaching? And I want that to sink in for a moment with everybody. Mm-hmm. If at the end of your life you're writing an obituary, it basically comes down to, what did you learn? What did you teach? And of course, the teaching we do is from the role modeling that we're doing, both positively or negatively. And rather than it being he who has the most toys wins at the end of the game, because we all know that that's not true. And when I say we all know, I'm talking about people that would be listening to this podcast would certainly know that materialism can be nice and it can be a blessing, but status and stuff doesn't really, in the end, make a life worth living. What does, though, is the impact that we have on others. The inspiration that we have to show up and be who we are and learn to walk in truth and try to share that with others so that it has a sharing, a complementary interaction with others rather than a self-based interaction with others it really can be summed up with those two words, learning and teaching. When we look at masters, when we look at gurus, we call them Adonai, we call them teacher, we call them prophet, but what they're doing is they're sharing information, and they're also trying to live and walk that information. And that's the hard part, is to try to be an inspiration to others and not do it in a way that's apocryphal, hypocritical, do as I say, not as I do. Well, we would like in this podcast that our doing matches up with our saying. So that's my intro for our podcast tonight, Jim. I've kind of bogarted the beginning here, didn't include you in a lot in it. So I'm going to pass that over to you now, and you can jump in here.
Oh, no, I'm done now. I'll see you. Have a good night.
All right. You did everything but drop the mic and have that noise.
Well, what came to mind as you were talking sort of backsteps a little bit, only in that I want to kind of address it from the perspective of energy and momentum. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting concept that and it's strictly a function of the time-space reality that we have this thing called a new year. You know, we have this moment that we get to stop and refine, reflect, or not, whatever the case may be. Here's where I see the challenge of it for most of us is we create a momentum throughout the course of the year, whether it's because, you know, we want to succeed at our job or whatever it is we're thinking we're focused on or thinking that we're really trying to zero in on. But the thoughts and feelings that we spend most of our time with throughout the year creates this momentum that is not necessarily easily undone or reversed just because we're coming into a period of the year that we've decided is about loving ourselves and loving other people. So we kind of crash land into the last 6 weeks of the year trying to recenter ourselves into some space that isn't where we were, right? Because that's this whole idea of resolutions is look at what was working in your life and what wasn't working, and then make this resolution, this thing that you're going to say or do that's going to conquer all. You know, I'm going to lose that weight. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to get a better job. I'm going to stop being mean to myself. Whatever it is, and. I struggle with that concept because it doesn't take into consideration the amount of energy that you've spent not getting there. You know, it's sort of like, it makes me laugh. Like, you know, if you think of it, the immediate image I was having was this debate that they're having over closing the government and border walls. And the funniest part about it is that the president has had complete control of the government Republican-wise for 2 years. Years and hasn't done anything. Now suddenly they're going to try to create a new momentum. It's the same kind of idea. We create these illusions in our head about how we think we should be based on what we're told, not necessarily taking the time, as you were talking about, to come to center. What am I teaching? What am I learning? You know, where am I in the scheme of things? So I want to help people find a softer landing pad. I think it's great that we have this 6 week period that we can kind of dial back where we've been, but it's about being conscious of our own personal energy to realize that we have created a momentum, and just because history says this is what we do doesn't mean that it's going to change anything.
Right.
You know, and so you have this wonderful 6 week period where you let down your guard and you let down your walls and you start to find a more connected place for a lot of people. They find, you know, their relationships or their families or whatever, they start to soften. And in the softening, they start to think about those other things. And then the beating of the mass conscious drum is then, well, let's create this resolution. And I'm going to encourage us to say, let's create an internal review. You know, let's create a period of what have I been putting my energy into for the past year? What about how have I been using that momentum? And is it a momentum I want to continue? Because I'm taking pretty much 6 weeks roughly to wind it down. So why don't I do that consciously? Why don't I start to say, hey, this habit didn't serve me for the whole year. So why am I still doing it? You know, this habit didn't serve me. So maybe I could make a different choice. And those choices then become more organic to the experience instead of that mass conscious of idea of what's perfect or what's right or what's good. It becomes what's right for the self. You know, from our last podcast, for what's right for, how do I say that? What's, how can I be better, or how can I be more, instead of me being in charge, or whatever, however you want to say. I kind of lost it there for a minute. But I think the general message is there. Bringing ourselves to a better space of review, or you know, and again, it's not a judgmental thing. It's an honest stop. This is what I invested my energy in for this entire period. How's it working?
Right. So I'd like to back up for a moment and go over something you said again, and just bounce this off of you, and hopefully our listeners will tune into this also. This idea that you said something along the lines of what I'm doing isn't serving me, and you used the word habit. This habit that I'm doing isn't serving me. So from opening that up, that idea up, and looking really underneath it, one of the statements I find myself using regularly in my practice is that everything that we do serves us. However, it may not serve us for the intention that we had for it, mm-hmm. or there's some misalignment or lack of synchronicity with what I'm saying and what I'm doing. Does that match? Are we on the same page with the additional?
I think so. It was actually pushing me into some other thought about it, because what I realized when you said that is this idea of that, even from the last podcast, we're exactly where we need to be. We're exactly where we want to be. So that being the case, then my presentation, at least to that degree, was then bringing in judgment. So it really wasn't an I space. It was a me space, which is kind of interesting and very powerful, even in the context of our conversation, that my desire is, and my understanding is what you were just talking about, which is that everything is for our benefit to some degree in some fashion. We just may not understand how. So assessing what's not working, maybe that's not the flow. Maybe that's not, you know, maybe it's more about focusing on what has been working and putting our energy there, you know, instead of focusing on what's apparently, quote, broken. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is the time of year when gym memberships are most sold.
Yes.
And I'm sure the health industry probably has a boom right around now. People have eaten more than they normally do over Thanksgiving and the holiday period, and now they're fasting and they're dieting and they're exercising. And, you know, by March, that's come and gone, and it's back to status quo and business as usual.
Well, you know, I want to interject if I could, because it's very, very interesting for me, since I don't eat meat anymore. It greatly changes the context of the holidays. I mean, like, greatly, radically changes the concept of the holidays, because there isn't, and I'm already, and because I'm also gluten-free, I don't eat the cookies. I don't eat the, you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't partake of. But interesting that you're bringing up the gym memberships, and that's all about people packing it on, which is typically emotional in nature. It's it's triggering everything that has to do with family and relationships and connection and all those things that we strive for. And so it's just so powerful, as you were talking, to just sort of see that whole concept of, wow, this is another form of, in a way, another form of self-abuse, because we're, you know, emotionally packing it in order to survive this period, again, rather than looking for what may be working well, or looking at, I'm a little stymied because now that I've seen that piece about focusing on what's broken, I'm now kind of going, okay, how do we reframe this now? Because even that's going in a direction that we don't really want to go. So as I'm talking and trying to say the words, I'm looking for a reframe.
Yeah.
To convey it differently.
When you're talking about emotionally packing it in, packing it on, so you're talking about the carbs creating more serotonin, you're talking about sugar giving people a high, so creating a subtle altered state of consciousness in order to deal mm-hmm. with pressures, expectations, how do I fit all these extra events into my month? I'm missing out on my favorite shows because I'm doing these other things. I'm not sleeping as much, drinking more alcohol, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of those things. You know, interestingly enough, as you were talking, I would like to think that the additional consumption of food during this period of time, some have speculated that there's a small component of that actually traces back to this mammalian brain we have, part of our brain being common to all mammals, that what is instinctual for them to do in the wintertime is what? Eat more and get ready to hibernate.
Yeah.
So, although we don't, you know, we here in California, I'm wearing a sweater today. I usually wear a long sleeve shirt, but in the summertime, it's, you know, short sleeves. So it's not a radical change of climate, but yet the DNA that goes all the way back to, you know, perhaps the last ice age does have some remnants left over, to where some nutritionists would say it is an instinctual thing to eat differently and eat more when there's less sun. So that's kind of a thing too, that even though that doesn't really apply to our society today, that if there's a subconscious, unconscious program operating there, that maybe we could give ourselves a little bit more of a break in how we accept and deal with that, and not make it so much about a guilt or shame thing because I've gained 5 pounds between November and December. So that was one thing that I found interesting just historically with regard to holidays and food and all that sort of thing. And then there's another scientist who studied a group of people in France that actually did learn to hibernate, as wherever they were, high in the Alps or something, and that just the food scarcity during that time as one way of dealing with increased need for extra fat to insulate the body because of the colder times and wintertime and all, and the decreased food, they literally like slept 20 hours a day. Which is just because there really wasn't anything to do, so they slept. And there are some that say, you know, that programming is in the gene pool, and that people tend to take naps more, sleep longer when there's less sun. And sometimes people, they come in and they're ashamed of it, or they're feeling guilty about it. And if anybody listening is in that category or in that group, some of this can really just be attributed to it's the gene pool, and it's probably going to continue staying that way, and maybe love yourself anyway and take care of it in March. You know, wait till March, you'll get it off again, you know, and then,
well,
it's bikini
season. And the other thing too, I mean, but I think to expand that a little bit, remembering that, you know, a lot of the teachings that we've encountered throughout our lives talk about the cycles. And while winter for some mammals may mean hibernation, ultimately winter is about internal time. It's time to be inside the self. This is the time that you're incubating. So as a natural part of the flow, this time frame is meant to be spent in more quiet, in more solitude, in more reflective, more meditative, more kind of that kind of thing, to prepare for the emergence in spring, you know, to prepare for that emergence and those seeds that get planted so that you can start to nurture and grow and develop. And that takes you into the summer where you're now into harvest and, you know, into the full bloom of whatever it is you've been attempting to create. And then the fall is, how does it all settle out now? How does that energy, how are you aligned in that now? Are you settled in? Are you aligned? Are you congruent with all those things that you said you wanted and all those things you've been trying to create? Because now you're coming into a new period where you get to reassess. You get to go, oh, okay, now I'm going to take that all inside and play in it and say, how's this? How am I doing? How's my energy system? How's my alignment? How's my thought process? How's my emotional body? How are all of those internal things going on? You know, and that can be an equally joyous time if it's not all about judgment and blame and, you know, like you said, you ate 5 cookies and now you're fat and, you know, because you gained 5 pounds and the jeans don't fit right and people look at you funny and, you know, whatever all the nonsense is we make up about that. But you had mentioned, this might be a good point to segue into the whole idea of what it means to shift state and how important that is. During this time, this very deeply internal time, this is an absolutely perfect, fertile ground to really get to understand your energy. Where is the baseline of your vibration, and what happens when you stimulate it? What happens when you instigate it into something new? What happens when you go to shift state so that you can better understand the larger picture, the I picture, instead of the me picture? You know. I think it's, you know, there's just so the it's just everything there is just fraught with opportunity, you know, more of that. It's all working out for me. It's all coming together in my best interest. So as it is for everybody.
The idea that you were talking about the cycle and this being more of a what's on the inside. So these laps that we do around the sun that we call a year, give us an opportunity to come back to a place of saying, yeah, I've been here before, and am I going to do anything different in this coming year? It's mindful. It forces us to be mindful of either progress made or the lack thereof as we're getting ready to take another lap. Do I want to run this one at the same pace? Do I want to go in a different direction? What obstacles did I encounter that are still present that are keeping me from making the state shift or making the directional change? It's all an opportunity to do some evaluation. But what's funny to me of any of the times during the year to do this work, it's funny that we're trying to cram more things into our average day or our average week or our month than is typical. So it really, in my opinion, keeps people from being able to do this. You know, why don't we actually take the month of January to recover from the helter-skelter of December? Mm-hmm. And then really, you know, maybe February 1st would be a better time to then say, okay, I've recovered from everything that we did from Thanksgiving to December and New Year's, to now have the opportunity to take that time that's required to meditate and pray and introspect. And now I've got a better plan. I just don't see how that's possible to do in the, like you said, the 6 weeks before we finish the lap.
Well, I think that's why this is so powerful to me is how many of us out there are willing to create that focus to say, okay, get conscious. It's now after Thanksgiving or it's after Halloween. So we know the energy starts to change radically right after Halloween. And you can start to feel the mass conscious momentum begins to build about what all these holidays are about. And the mass conscious does its thing, the media does its thing, and so it becomes a full-on onslaught of our senses, of our energy, of our emotions, of anything that can be stimulated to bring that all that stuff up. So if it's being stimulated and it's being generated, why not use that time to start ramping down? I hear what you're saying, but I'm offering an alternative to stop playing that game. It's not necessary, it's not useful, and it doesn't serve anybody really in the end. If you get to understand your own energy system, if you get to that point where you can look at these holidays and you can, you know, for me at this point, this time of year is challenging for me, not because I can't measure up, but because when you disconnect from all the crap that's associated with it, it's really fascinating to watch, but it's also really distressing to see how it happens, because so many people lose their center and lose their ability to be who they fully are during this time, because it's all about what everybody else expects of me, what everybody else thinks I need to do. I got to cook, I got to host, I got to make cookies, I got to send cards, I got to get presents, I got to. And if you talk to, and I talk to a lot of people, you know, when I'm driving and stuff, and it surprises me how many people say, is it over yet?
Yeah.
Is it over yet? Four more weeks and it's done. Or, oh my God, thank God it's only two more weeks and it's over. You know, I used to go through, because it took me quite a while in my own personal development and transition. It took me a long time. I would, right after Halloween, by the time December 1st got here, I was full on, like, I'm trying to think of the right word to describe it. Part of it was probably depressed, part of it anxious, part of it angry, part of it annoyed, because all of the have-tos and all of the shoulds and all of the crap that I don't play in was in my face all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, maybe I'm just a Grinch. Maybe I'm just a mean person, you know? And I'm like, no, it isn't that I don't enjoy sharing love. It isn't that I don't enjoy coming together with the people that I love and engaging people and all of that feel good, but it's all the rest of it that doesn't serve anything. And right. And then when you're not engaged at that level, when you don't go full bore into, you know, Black Friday and you know, all those things, it really changes your perspective about the importance of this time frame. Because when you're not engaging in that way, it's another day. It's another day in a little different energy. So I guess that's why I really encouraging people to focus a little differently, because it isn't that you can't still have amazing time with family, or maybe you don't have time with family because it's not really what you want to do. it may be that that's not how you want to spend your time. Excuse me. But we're so afraid to step out of that model and just be true to who we are, because we're going to disappoint people, because we're going to upset people, because we're not going to be enough, blah, 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 blah. And that's why I go back to the state shift process, using this time, using this time period to really get dialed into your own frequency, and then seeing what tools you can use to amp up your frequency so you can create a much more positive influence, not only in your own experience, but in the experience of the world around you. And I realized that I was just going on and on and on. So
you were inspired.
I'll take a breath.
Since we're still on this idea of energies showing up in the fall and, you know, the November, December timeframe, there seems to be this desire at a subconscious, unconscious level for people to experience some sense of connection, and connection with friends and family for sure, but even to a broader degree of this connection with society, connection with humanity, and this idea of a gift exchange of some sort, or just giving in general. Interesting, people come in the office and they're distressed over who I'm going to be with on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or these sacred days that we set aside, Thanksgiving, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. The who am I going to be with someone? Am I going to be in a group of people? Am I going to be doing this solo and all alone? You know, there's a whole variety of ways all that can unfold. But there is a lot of desire, I think would be the right word, that even if people are not going to be with the ones that they would like to be with the most, they'll tolerate being with people they don't want to be with simply to be with, which I find really interesting. Because again, at a time of year where we talk about new beginnings and doing new things differently, it's as if it's impossible to do because you haven't really set aside the time to do the inner work before you can put any of this in motion.
And that led me to the question, which I hope you'll answer, which is, why do we do that to ourselves? Why do we not give ourselves permission to have and celebrate in the fashion that feels best? You know, why do we do that? Why don't we give ourselves permission to have more a better balance?
Do you think? And just to experiment, you know, for example, last year, not this past Christmas, but the one before, I took a week and went down and visited my buddy Kirk down in Las Perillas between Baja or the southern Baja of Cabo and La Paz. And, you know, there was a cactus down there that had some Christmas lights on it, but that was about the closest thing I saw to an American Christmas. And it was just interesting to be completely off-grid and unplugged from the commercialism of Christmas here, as well as, you know, family. Kirk has been in my life for a long time, and he is like family, but he's, you know, really more of a best friend. But it was interesting that it reminded me really of some of the deployments I've been on when I was in the military, of, you know, just being in a different country that doesn't do Christmas the way we do. And in that case, most of the people in the military tried to pretend it wasn't happening so they didn't have to feel the sense of disconnection because they wanted to be home. And, you know, songs like "I'll Be Home for Christmas" and or "It'll Be a Blue Christmas Without You." You know, yeah. I remember those songs being played over and over and over again. And it's like, oh my gosh, who's playing these songs? It's like you're torturing us, you know? But where I was going with this personal examples is just having the courage to say, there is no way I can know what that would be like unless I actually try it. And having the courage to do what you're talking about of doing something different only so that I have some contrast to compare the way I've been doing it to the way that I don't even know what I don't even know about what it might be like to try it a different way. So it was interesting that my experience last year was very absent of Christmas. And this year it was kind of like almost felt like I was making up for what I didn't do last year by doing more than I did like even the year before that this year. So it's just kind of interesting.
What does that mean, doing more than you did?
Oh, just of the traditional things, of attending more Christmas parties, maybe buying more gifts or, you know, playing the game, going along with, participating in the traditions. And it didn't feel awkward, and I didn't do it with remorse or resistance. It was just kind of I gave myself permission to not do it last year. So now I can do it this year with maybe more of a purity or more of a, wholeness about it. because I know that I always have the ability to go do what I did last year. And I didn't feel guilty about it and didn't feel any wrongdoing. So
what did you notice different in your experience this year that was not in your experience before you took that break?
What did I notice? The sense of when, let's say on Christmas Eve, we're having a family gathering, and it was just like, I really felt like I wanted to be there this year rather than I had to be there. And for me, that was a nice shift, a nice experience.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have been able to do that had I not gone away and given myself permission to completely not participate the year before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. It's very powerful to kind of find your own space and see what do you like, what don't you like, you know? I don't think there's anything that's good, bad, right, or wrong in any of it. It's just a question of what brings forth the best of you or me, or, you know, this year is the first year for me in, I want to say easily 5 years, that I was actually interested in participating. Mm. I mean, like I did decorations and we got a tree and I think a large part of that was because this year was just me and Michael. And so it was joyful to prepare and be engaged in the holiday, with him. And getting, you know, even to getting gifts and things that we did for each other just had a whole different vibe and an energy to it for me. And there wasn't a pressure. There wasn't all that crap. It was just, let's decorate the house that makes us feel good, you know? And so we created this warm, wonderful environment to hang out in that we love and enjoy doing, you know, and it just feels nice. And he would have an idea about something and I would fulfill that idea because I could, you know, and then he would get to experience that and go, that's so cool. And, you know, and so it was more about filling all that space of love between us, you know what I mean? And seeking how to continue to elevate that, instead of it being, well, you're supposed to do this and this is what we're supposed to do now. And then we're supposed to go do this. You know, we didn't have any supposed tos. We had the opportunity to just be in it however we wanted to be in it. You know, I think there was a point we were talking about going and doing something and we both ended up going, yeah, no. You know, it was like, no, we're good. Let's just hang out here and enjoy ourselves, you know, and didn't put any of that burden or any of that crap on us about what we think we should have, could have, would have done. We did what we felt like. And because we did, we enjoyed the heck out of it and really had a good time with it.
Sweet.
And I think that's really what I'm trying to speak to is in what you're speaking to, which I think is very powerful, is that explore your own field, man. Figure out what you have history. The history isn't going away. You know, you learned your tradition. You've been doing it for decades.
Right.
You know, and that's not to say if the tradition serves and you don't feel stressed out and you can embody the space of love and joy and be fully engaged in that shifted state through the period, good for you. That's awesome that you've gotten to that point. But I think for most, that's not the case. Most are struggling to get through the 4 weeks of the year waiting for January 2nd so they can put the shit away and go off and get back to whatever it is they think they wanted to get back to.
Yeah. So let's, this right now in the podcast feels like for me that we've talked enough about holidays and gotten ourselves to the beginning of the year. And now here we are at the beginning of the year. And
yeah,
is there worth and value? I'd like to hear more of your thoughts and conjecture about the idea you have that maybe New Year's resolutions aren't worth making.
Yeah, I think there's actually memes out there about it too, you know, that I've seen recently too, that I think are pretty cool. But the idea of at this time, I have to stop everything and create this thing that's going to create change in my life, really holds very little logic. Because if you think about it logically, whatever it is you're deciding you're going to change, you've been likely unsuccessful at changing for the previous 11 months or multiple years, whatever the case may be. So doing the mental exercise, this is, to me, resolutions are a me thing, not an I thing. They're not. Resolutions don't come from an inspired place. Typically, they come from an ego place that says, I need to be better. I need to fix this. I'm broken. This isn't working. It's not coming from, how do I elevate my experience to something greater? Now, I'm not saying there aren't some that don't go there, but I think most don't go there, especially if it's about a resolution, because it's trying to talk yourself into, now I can be stronger, better, and more on top of my game. Because I'm just deciding to do it now. But what's missing is all of the energetic underpinning. You know, the whole deal about creation is that creation comes as a result of having an idea or having a desire that you translate into a thought, then translate into inspiration that allows you to move forward in action to generate the manifestation of that thing into physical reality. Well, if you haven't done that work, how the heck are you going to manifest 20 pounds off your body when you haven't done any work to get there? And I don't mean the work like be to the gym every day. I mean the work of, how are you shifting state on a daily basis to step into that consciousness of health, to step into that consciousness of connection, to step into that consciousness of love? How are you doing that? If you think that you can suddenly flip a switch and now I'm going to make a resolution that's going to make me better, it's a pipe dream. I mean, I hate to be that dramatic about it, but it's a pipe dream, because you haven't done the underlying work. You haven't done the energetic building of your field to support that. You know, if you think about it in terms of weight, you know, holding weight is a lot about resistance. It's all about resistance. It's all about waiting for something, but we don't stop long enough to figure out what it is we're holding on to. What are we waiting for? What are we holding back for? What is it, I'm going to create a resolution. I'm going to lose this weight because I'm going to do this program and it's going to work. Okay. And it may, because you'll put, you know, the ego can create enough momentum to keep you going for a week or two, sometimes three, maybe even four if you're really good at it. But the end result is, when you go to fly, you have no wings. So you're dead at liftoff. And then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to fulfill the ego crap that started it to begin with. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like full circle. Okay, we're going to start the tape all over again. So now we're going to go through another 11 months of the battle. You know, I should eat this. No, I shouldn't eat that. Should I eat? How do I eat? You know, and then come the 11th hour next year, you're going to go through the same thing. Because there's no energetic support to change that. So that's my spiel on on the idea of resolutions. I would much rather see people going into meditation and spending time in finding and understanding their own energy system, or getting together with someone who has insight into it that can help you better understand your energy system, so that you can make more focused choices in the direction that serves I and not necessarily me.
So let's talk a little bit more, please, about energy to sustain the intention.
Yes. Go ahead.
A couple of metaphors, one of which I've learned in the last 3 or 4 years with regarding boat ownership. It was a meme or a slogan or a term or a wise statement that I've learned since buying a boat is that I'm going to use the number for $100,000 just for sake of ease, and it's a number people can relate to. If you're going to buy a boat for $100,000 and you plan on using it somewhere between 5 and 10 years, you actually need to have $200,000 in order to operate it. So you can buy the boat to operate and maintain it. So you can buy the boat for $100,000 and you can own it, but if you really want to use it and maintain it, it's going to take double the amount of money of its value to actually be able to do that. And no salesperson
love
really
that
is going to go around and tell you that before you buy the boat, because they want to sell you the boat. They don't care. They don't care about whether you use it or you maintain it. They just want the sale. So it's only after you've made the purchase that then you realize all of the hidden costs in boat ownership and just the cycle of repair. You know, bait pumps last about 2 years. Sump pumps last about 2 years. All of the stuff on boats really don't last very long because of the harsh environment that they're in. And they don't fix themselves. And even if you bought the parts at a discount, generally most people aren't able to do their own repairs. Even if they're very mechanically savvy, it requires almost a mechanical engineer to get into the spaces and operate, because boats are built, you know, because space is very limited. It's really difficult to get in there and do that work. So anyway, I'd like to use that metaphor as a background behind, you know, here I have the idea of I'm going to buy a boat. I want to use a boat. And so I have the initial resource called money to bear the burden of the cost of the expense of the boat.
Right.
And then what generally happens with people is, I mean, think about this with any kind of recreational vehicle or any kind of a hobby related piece of equipment. People buy the piece of equipment, not realizing the true hidden costs, and they don't use it. And then it sits around for a year or two, and people don't realize that they're not using it until one day the husband or wife says, you know, we're really not using it. Let's sell it for half of what we bought it for. So it's a smoking hot deal for the next person who buys it, but then the next person who buys it ends up doing the same thing. They've never had one before, which is often true for most people. And it's just a fascinating concept that it's double the energy required to actually use it, maintain it, and enjoy the use of it. So if I had the idea that I'm going to spend $100,000 on a boat, but the true cost is $200,000 and I have the $200,000, now as I use the full $200,000 over the next 5 to 10 years, it's full enjoyment because I knew what it was going to cost going into it. But if I thought it was going to be $100,000 and over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, it really cost $200,000 and that was really a stretch for me to come up with the extra cash, now I'm operating out of bitterness, resentment, frustration, fatigue, stress, worry, which it's kind of like most people that have had a boat, they go, duh, like you didn't know that? You know, the word boat stands for break out another thousand. That's what the BAT stands for. So, but I think we can use that same metaphor into any kind of thing that you think you want to do. Yeah. There are the upfront costs or the surface costs, and there are the hidden costs. And I'm not just talking money. You know, I'm talking time and energy, attention, maintenance, repair, all of those sorts of things. That if we can begin to make these choices with a more complete understanding, both the passion of wanting to have the experience and also the wisdom of what the true cost is, then we're making better choices, and there might be some sustainability, i.e. the energy to actually get it where you want it to be and keep it there, whatever that is. I feel like I rambled on.
It's such a brilliant analogy. I mean, it just, even if you use the, you know, what we've been using all along with the whole idea of I want to lose 10 pounds, you know, that analogy works so brilliantly because what's holding the 10 pounds in place is not necessarily physiology. It's something else. It's energy. That is energy that has condensed to the point that it's just stuck, right? It's just there. It's not moving. It's not doing anything. It's just there. So the amount of energy that is required for an individual to turn inward and to begin to assess all of that and begin to learn the language of yourself, learn the language of your energy, that's a huge energy investment. It's a huge energy requirement because you have to fully show up in it for that to work. And you have to be willing to, in some cases, you know, what, you know, incidental cost, the repairs, those to me are things like relationships that don't serve you that need to go away, a job that you're working that you hate, a relationship that you're in that's abusive, whatever the choices that you've made, good, bad, or indifferent, but in this case, those are also energy investments. So you have to invest even more energy to divest yourself of those situations. And that's a huge, like you said, that's the other $100,000. That's the stuff you don't see going in, but you got to take the time to see it at some point in order to affect radical change. And I hope that there's nowhere in there that I was coming across judgmentally, because that's not where I was coming from. But for some reason, I thought maybe I might have thrown a few words that could come across that way.
Huh. I didn't feel it if you did.
Oh, good. Okay.
The idea of having a desire, we could put in terms of a thought, and converting that thought or that desire into an experience would require the motion or the energy to propel it into action. So I have this notion of I'm sitting in a car and it's stationary, and I'm heading out of a parking lot, and I know I want to turn left. So I can be at the point where I'm needing to make the turn, and I can turn the wheel, but without actually stepping on the accelerator and propelling the car into the turn, I'm just going to stay there. And you can use that analogy of a stationary vehicle that needs to make a turn in one direction or the other, and you've turned the wheel and the wheels are turned, but still there, you're still sitting there. Or you could have the other idea of I'm going down the highway and it's heading east and I want to turn to the north, and I keep my foot on the accelerator and don't lift and don't apply the brake, and I pass the street I wanted to take, right? And then I pass the next one and the next one and the next one, and I'm a whole state over of where I wanted to be. So it's that combination both of making the turn and also either slowing down to make the turn or actually accelerating to begin the turn. It's a combination of both
to make a directional momentum change.
Yeah. So now that we've got all these metaphors that we've tossed out there, is there anything else that you want to add into state change, attitudinal change, emotional change, the energy, the wind in the sail of the boat? Again, you can turn the wheel, but if you don't have the wind in the sail, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to call that managing momentum. Because momentum is nothing more than an accumulation of energy focused in a direction. It is the gathering of an energy that you focus, and then in that focus you begin to create movement, and in that movement you create momentum. And just like the driving past the streets, you know, your momentum, that to me is a perfect example of where we kind of started talking about coming into the holidays. That momentum that you're coming into the holidays with is the same idea. You've been barreling down the freeway at 80 miles an hour. You're in another state. You're not even in the state you wanted to go to the east, you know? So there's a lot to do there. And you can imagine the amount of energy that's going to take. That's not a small investment of energy. And I think that a lot of times we may not, we don't recognize that there is that investment. But I also wonder too, if it's a question of, it becomes a question of what we've talked about before with the reptilian brain, you know, sameness is safety. So if I just keep going in the same momentum, then I'm going to be okay because I was live yesterday and I'll be alive. And if I'm alive tomorrow, it still works. But that's all that ego driven, me driven, not there is no inspiration there. There is no connection there. There's no energy that's lifting you to a better place. It's energy that's driving you to somewhere that you don't know, mm-hmm. but you apparently have given yourself a pretty good story about where that somewhere is because you're traveling like a bat out of hell to get there. But it is not inspired. It is not connected.
Uh-huh. So, Jim, you've recently made a state change.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. Yeah.
I did. Maybe you could spend a moment talking about how you did that.
Wow. So it took me over a year to realize that part of the struggle I was having in Southern California and San Diego was that I could not generate momentum, and the momentum that I could generate, I didn't want. It wasn't serving. It wasn't where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. And so anytime I was trying to put some energy into something, I actually kept saying to myself, I don't understand. Where is the energy? I'm so used to connecting to a flow of energy and then expanding that and taking it to where I want to go. Where the hell's the energy? It took me almost a year and a half to finally say, oh, maybe I'm in the wrong place. Maybe it is the place, you know, because I went through all of that, you know, you got to take you with you, you know, and don't run away from your problems. And I'm like, but I don't really have any problems. I just not happy here. That's a problem. And no amount of fake it till you make it is making that change, because it's also not supported by anything, you know. So we had talked about in end of November, early December last year. No, where are we? Yeah, it would have been a year ago, November. We had talked about the possibility of moving, and our agreement with each other was let's give it a couple months because we don't have to sign a new lease till February. Let's be clear that we're ready for change and let's see what happens. 3 months rolls by, not a frickin' thing. Nothing changed. Nothing moved. Nothing was, that was like, what the heck? We signed a new lease, which was a longer lease in order to maintain the rent that we were paying. And it was at that point that I went, I simply cannot do this anymore. I literally seemed like I woke up one morning, and I'm sure it wasn't quite that abrupt, but I was doing the work every day. I was doing the things I was doing my meditation. I was doing my state shifting. I'm doing the breath work that I love to do to keep that constant shift going so that I was available to as much as I could be available to. Right. So then I had a conversation with my mentor, and that conversation was, why haven't you made a decision? And I was like, what do you mean? I haven't made a decision. Well, you say you're going to move, but you haven't made a decision to move. Why haven't you made a decision? Well, because I'm waiting to feel some clarity and some focus on this. Well, the clarity and the focus is the decision. Make the decision. And as soon as that clicked for me, the whole world opened up again. And I went, oh my God. And I literally got off the phone and started making a plan. And when Michael and I talked about it originally in the original form was, well, we'll sign this new lease, so that'll give us a year to figure it out. And what I realized was that if I had to wait a year to figure it out, I was either going to be dead or I was leaving. One way or the other, it wasn't going to happen. And I mean that very seriously. It was at the point that the idea of staying there for another year, feeling like I was feeling, knowing how unsuccessful I had been at impacting that, I couldn't even wrap my brain around that. So when Michael came home that night, we sat down and I said, okay, so here's what's happening. here's what's happening for me. I can't do this. And the maximum amount of time that I feel like I can still maintain here is about 3 months. And I love you, and I want us to be together, and I want us to do this. And I also understand if you can't, but I have to. It's not a if, and, or but. It's a I need to change this momentum. I need to shift my energy. I need to move forward. So part of that is also an understanding in the communication that what I knew because of the clarity of the choice that I was making was that behind that was also a lot of clarity about the unfolding of how it would take place. Meaning, I was absolutely clear that the move would be as easy as it could be. I was clear that it would be very successful. I was clear that it would line up the way that I could see it lining up. But the clarity of that was the harnessing of my own energy, the harnessing of my own feel in that desire to say, I am manifesting this tremendous move. I have no idea how, because we figured we needed $5,000 to make the move happen that we didn't have. We had a lease that was going on for another 15 months, 12 months plus three additional to make it even. And Michael had a job that is with a company, you know, fortunately. So as I became clear about what I was going to do, I started receiving and getting hits and downloads. And what I realized was that the most important thing about this move was to make sure that Michael had an anchor from there. And that anchor was his work, because the company originated here in Denver. So he could get a transfer, which would leave him in the same environment in a new state, but it was an environment he's comfortable with. So that transition would be challenging because it's a new store in a new state, but it would be easy because he knows he's been doing it for 15 years. He knows their business, right? So that was the first thing, was to anchor him so that there would be no spinning and twirling and things going out of control. And then the next phase was, how do we create the money? So we just started creating it. I started selling things. We decided how we were going to do it. We decided we were going to go with an 6 by 7 by 8 foot U-Haul box. And so I started packing the U-Haul box in my head. Okay, what can I fit in the U-Haul box? What can I, you know I have 6 feet by 7 feet by 8 feet. What of what we have is going to fit in this box, and then, you know, clothes and crap going in the cars? Worked that out for a few weeks, you know, kept refining it. And as I realized things that we weren't going to keep, I was selling them. And then clients would show up I hadn't seen in a year, who needed some sessions. So in the course of 3 months, personally, and I didn't have a regular job other than driving Lyft and working on occasional clients. He had a regular job, but his paychecks were pretty well, you know, sectioned. You know, he already had bills, and he already had rent, and he already had that. So in the course of that time, I ended up managing to save and create more than he did, given that he has a salaried position with the company that he's been with for 15 years. Because the clarity of the work and my focus in harnessing my energy and my field, I said, this is where we got to go. So I was making great money from the stuff I was selling, which was kind of bizarre because, you know, when you try to sell stuff on Craigslist, people are like, you know, I'll give you a nickel. You know? So it just continued in that fashion. We happened to have a fluke weird thing that happened on our on a trip that we went to Vegas with our friends Ben and Leanne. We went to a timeshare presentation, not intending to do anything, and ended up buying a freaking timeshare. But this was like 3 years ago, and we never used it. Two of the years we didn't use the timeshare, and it just so happened that I could convert those 2 weeks into a week at Vail. So we were able to road trip from San Diego. We ended up in Vail, and it gave us a week to find a place to live because we didn't have any place to live, and we chose not to drive out here to waste the time and money to do that. Because we were like, we're moving. We'll figure it out. We found a place to live in the first 5 hours that we were in Denver. When U-Haul picked up the box from our house in La Mesa, we didn't have a place to live in Colorado. So I randomly picked an address in Lakewood, Colorado, because I knew we were going to live in either Golden or Lakewood. And I randomly picked an address and said, send the box there. I kid you not, the box is 2 minutes from where we live, meaning, and didn't know that at the time, because we came to this apartment. It worked out beautifully. We loved this place. It was 2-bedroom, 2-bath. It was perfect. And then I had to go, okay, where's our stuff? Our stuff was literally down the street. It was freaking crazy. So I'm being really detailed because it's really important to me especially for the listeners, to understand what motivated all of that was what I was talking about earlier. I didn't create a resolution that said, I want a happier life. I'm going to move someday. I made a choice and then harnessed my field and my focus and my energy to create the best possible outcome that I could without trying to determine how it was going to happen. And that's really important. I had a timeline. I knew, you know, this is what we got to do. We got 3 months. We're going to do this. We're going to leave September 1st. So we had mapped out basically what we wanted to do, but the how of it is like, how are we going to create the money? How are we going to create a new place to live? How are we going to, I don't care. I'm just going to do what I know I need to do every day toward this goal and toward this process. And it has been nothing short of magical from the day we left San Diego, nonstop. I mean, it's been, you know, I've shared a couple of the incidences of serendipity and kind of interesting things that happen, but I kid you not, they've not stopped and they happen every single day because that's how powerful momentum is. You know, that's how powerful when we harness our energy. And I know you have this experience. You went through this with your car. You went through this with your electric car. You went through it with the Air Force or been with the flying. You know, I know you know what that is. but I appreciate you letting me take the time to kind of detail it. I'm not really wanting to, you know, scratch my own back here. It was more understanding how significant and powerful it is when you take the time to understand your own energy system and then get in alignment with it, focus on that eye, focus on that expanded space, and then let the momentum carry you without needing to know how. Just know that I'm doing the what, I'm showing up, I'm doing my work. It's requiring that extra $100,000, you know, getting that furniture into this house at 6,500 feet when I've been living at sea level for 10 years was an event.
Right. Yeah. Somewhere in all of that, it seemed like you were saying a couple of times without using these words that what was important was not attaching to the outcome, the specific outcome, that you were willing to let that unfold and just know that it's moving in this direction. But am I on tracking with you there? That is it fair to use that phrase?
100%. Yes.
Okay.
One of my favorite phrases.
Okay. Where I would like to go a little deeper, when you used the phrase when you're aware of your own energy system. You remember saying that?
Yes.
Okay, so there might be some listeners out there, and I would venture to say most people don't know what that means. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And there's a piece of technology that I've discovered that can help, if you think of it like training wheels, until you learn how to do it yourself. There's a piece of technology that I use and teach others to use to begin to have an awareness that we do have an energy system. And it is more than subtle. And the awareness of where we are in that energy system is vital to really having a breakout of a habituated or a habit of just keeping doing laps around the planet, and we're in the same place. So where I'd like to go, the technology that I have about 10 years of experience with is called the Cyleron Mind Lamp. And tell me, Jim, on your end, if that's visible.
Yeah, just raise up just a hair. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Perfect. So this lamp sits on my credenza in my consulting room, and it's on all day long. It's created by the Cyleron company, and they're a group in Princeton, New Jersey, and they're part of the PEAR Lab. And the PEAR stands for like the Princeton Experimental Anomalies Research Group. And their primary focus of this device was helping people learn how to attend to their intentions. And so they discovered, or it's just been a theory for a long time, and now there's a piece of technology here that can help us attend to, pay attention to, and to bring the energy to. If you're going to attend to your garden, that's more than just a, oh, there's weeds and I know the weeds need to be pulled. You got to get out there and pull the weeds. So this is the part of matching up the intention to grow vegetables or till the soil or plant the seeds. You have all those in intentions, which is what a resolution is. It's nothing more than a declaration of an intention. But this is now applying the attention, the energy, to the intention. So how this mind lamp works, notice the colors, and I'm going to turn it up. I'm going to turn it this way. So I am showing you our energy system. Now I got it upside down. No, I do have it right. So what color is this on your end, Jim?
Red, orange-ish. Red. You're talking about the one at the bottom there?
Yep, by my finger right here.
It looks more orange than red to me from here.
All right. But well, let's just say in the manual on my end it's red.
Okay.
And so then we go to orange.
Oh, now I see. Yellow. It looks more red now. Yeah.
Then we have green, then we have blue, a lighter blue, then a kind of a darker blue purple, and then we get into a purple and like a pink at the top. There are 8 colors that the mind lamp can be. And for those who are familiar with our chakra system, you're looking at it. You're looking at our chakra system right here. Mm-hmm. So what I've noticed is if I drew a line right here for the work that I've done, and I'm not trying to make this a lecture on the chakra system, but I'm trying to make this a sharing of information about more than a lecture, is I would refer to these 3 colors as the lower chakra energies. My personal conjecture and opinion is that this is where most of society lives, in this energy system right here. You know, this would be the root chakra, this would be the crown chakra, and you have all the other chakras in between. So this is our spinal system.
It's actually one beyond. It's one body beyond the 8th, because it's the 8th chakra. So 7th, right. Seventh is the purple, 8th is out.
Mm-hmm. And some would say there are as many as 10, but just for the purpose of this being a piece of technology that can help us look outside of ourselves to a device that resonates with the energy that's in the room. And some people might say, well, how does that work? So in the bottom of the lamp, there's a sensor. And the sensor is tuned into these 8 frequencies of color. Color is a frequency. When our mind thinks about a color, guess what it does? It tunes into that frequency. And because our cranium is actually an omnidirectional both transmitter and receiver, the receiver in this mind lamp detects the transmission of the thought that's converted into the frequency of that color, such that the lamp then begins to vibrate and become that color, because it's a vibration. Light is a vibration, and it then encodes it into that color. And the mind lamp goes from its base white color to one of these 8 colors. So it normally defaults to the color white. Most of my day, I shouldn't say most, but the majority anyway of my day, because it's on in my office all day long, it sits right next to me. And when it illuminates a color other than white, that is telling me that the primary energy in the room is that chakra that is promoting that energy. Unless we're actually doing the exercise that the mind lamp was intended to do, which is choosing a color that you want the mind lamp to become, that would be the intention. And then the attending to that intention is to both think about the mind lamp becoming that color and feel a feeling that corresponds to a color. Like if you're thinking the color blue, you'd think about perhaps maybe swimming in a pool of blue water and you feel the water all over you. So you're using both feeling, emotion, and thought, intention together. That is being transmitted from the mind through the room to the sensor, converted by the transmitter or the converter in the mind lamp to become that color. And in that moment, you've just performed what we call mind over matter. And this device reveals that. So that was its original intention, was to help people harness their attention into an intention and vice versa, to actually be able to learn that the power of thought and the energy behind it, feeling, emotion, is what gets stuff done. So there's 2 purposes for this mind lamp. One is to learn how to set an intention and attend to it such that you get to see the desired outcome. And it's actually a pretty neat feeling when you can play with this mind lamp like you do a piano, and you can get the desired outfit, the effect from it, like you do a piano. You're not just plunking keys and making a sound. You can actually make it go from one color to another color to another color at will. But like playing a piano, it's not something you can do in one setting. And that's where I lose most people when I encourage them to buy the device. It's $200, so it's an investment. Mm-hmm. But I swear it's no different than making time to do a meditation. It's, to me, would be, if you really want to become a good prayer warrior or a meditator or a trance, any kind of the more spiritual practices, this would be an awesome way to begin to do that, so you actually know that it's happening. You've got an external source outside you as a coach or a guide to give you that validation that you're in the right frequency, which would be, in this case, you know, if you sit down to meditate, you'd want to see the mind lamp in these upper colors. If you're meditating down here, you should take a break, do something else, because it ain't happening. So just imagine if this mind lamp was sitting in the middle of a group of people who were meditating, and the mind lamp is one of these colors. That would tell me that there are enough people in the room who are really not in the frequency zone. They're not operating in their higher chakras. They're caught up in some other thinking or experience down here. So it's a really powerful tool to be used in a variety of ways to help people really begin to be aware of where their energy system is. So there's another device that I have in my office, the EM Wave, that is a clip that goes on the earlobe that detects pulse, but also the intensity of the pulse, and then that's converted into heart rate variability. One of the cool things about that device is it can tell me as the technician if a person's autonomic nervous system has been triggered to where they're in the subconscious, unconscious realm of the fight, run away, or freeze and do nothing mode. Which, oh, by the way, if a person is in fight, flight, or freeze, my mind lamp that's right next to that is going to be in one of these base colors.
Yeah.
Duh. No surprise there, right? So what's really fun for me to do with folks that come in is they'll come in and consciously tell me that they're feeling good and that they're in a good space, but yet we'll put the ear clip on them and the mind lamp is saying, you know, this is the reality of where you are. And look, you're in a state of low coherence and the light's red and your heart rate variability is zigzaggy all over the place. So there's a disconnect between what your conscious mind is telling you or what you're telling me and what's actually really going on with you. And that's why nothing's happening in your life, is because there's a split disconnect between energy system, which is what this is, and what you're actually saying. So now let's go back and apply that to New Year's resolutions. If your energy system isn't in the higher colors about what you're intending to do, dude, you're just going to take a few more laps around the sun and you're going to be right here next year. Yep. See you next year. See you next year. Yeah. So this, imagine doing marriage counseling, same kind of thing. Bring a couple in. Here's the mind lamp saying, this is where you guys are. Which one of you is going to make a state shift and get out of ego and say, I want to practice. This is so fun for me right now, what I'm doing. This is fear. This is love. Fear, love. Fear, love. Okay? State shift from fear to love. Who's going to do that? Who's going to volunteer? Who's going to say, all right, is it more important to be right, or is it more important for me to experience harmony, peace, and joy, and love, and acceptance? Which one do I want to be in?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not possible to defeat the mind lamp. I have not seen people be in their higher chakras and the mind lamp shows up red, unless I'm there, because I'm also in the room too. And Jeff can be in the lower chakras, even sometimes when the people I'm working with are in the higher chakras. And then, you know, I have to be honest with myself, take a breath, make the shift, and join them. Because perhaps I just got off the phone with somebody, or I'm concerned that there's not enough time. You know, all these other things that show up. And it's just a really nice way.
Let's take a second to clarify that, because it's a very significant part of what we're talking about, and that is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Those tools are amazing and are so powerful and can impact so much. But to someone who is unwilling to be conscious of their own experience, you can talk yourself into anything. You know,
sure.
You can talk yourself into believing whatever you want to talk yourself into believing. And the cool thing in what you said is that you recognize that your energy's field isn't always where you want it to be. So the responsible thing to do then is shift state. The responsible thing to do then is stop whatever you're doing and shift, however you do that, whether it's a meditative thing, whether it's there isn't a whole lot of momentum, so it's an easier shift than you're thinking, because it's just a matter of where you're putting your attention. A lot of times it's that simple. But the important thing about it is consciousness. It's learning to be conscious of your essence, being conscious of your energy, being conscious of how does it feel, where does it flow, what is it, you know, what's the there's a lot of dimension, and it takes time and energy and focus to come to clarity about that. So don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of that time and energy, because it's absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true working with the lamp or not working with the lamp.
Right,
both directions, right. It's important.
What I'm finding myself asking people, what I'm asking people to do when they come in the office, I'm backing my chair up for a moment because I want to do a stand-up demonstration. So my head's going to disappear, which is fine, but I can turn the camera up a little bit here. So I ask people before they sit down, where are you in your energy system right now? I want you to close your eyes and go all the way from lower tailbone, spine, past genitals, up to stomach, past heart to throat, over mouth, over third eye, up to crown chakra. And I want you to just feel with your hands. Let your hands be the sensor of where you are. Where is the source of your energy right now? Where it's a ball, and it moves up and it moves down.
This right? is so, so good.
So everybody wants to tell me, oh, I'm right here. almost everybody wants to do and wants to sell me this. And I look over at the mind lamp, and it isn't blue or green. It's not blue or green. It's usually orange, yellow, or red. I got those backwards. But it's usually down here. And sometimes it's me, because for some, when I'm trying to introduce this to some folks, it's such a huge paradigm shift for them that they're not ready for it. And they're so used to being able to BS themselves and me that they realize that they're in the presence of someone who's not going to hear the BS, and a device that isn't going to, you can't fool it. It can't be fooled. So then I ask if they're working as a couple, I ask them, would you guys be willing to make an agreement to take this out of here as a tool of this? Hey, where are we right now? Because somebody can be down here lower, somebody can be up here higher, and this isn't a good time for us to try to have this discussion or this agreement. We can change pretty quickly to both get up here, but it is absolutely pointless to have any kind of a discussion in the fear blocks down here. This is a grand waste of time. You would be better off to run to the nearest wall and start beating your head feverishly against it than you would to continue to hurl assaults and try to prove to your partner or whoever you're engaged in verbal battle with. That's a grand waste of time and winds up with just significant injuries of things we say and how we hurt each other. And the whole time the mind lamp is just cooking away with the red, orange, and yellow energies.
Very cool. We are at that time, my friend.
Okay. Maybe in a future podcast, I could set this up. Maybe the mind lamp could be off here in the corner or something, and we could just kind of take a look at where our podcast energy is.
That's cool.
It'd be fun. It would be fun to be able to do that.
Yeah, I like that. This has been we have been very focused, but a very powerful, a lot of depth, a lot of good information, I think, this time, as we've, started with this idea of trusting our cycle, trusting the cycles that are presented to us in the playground of time and space, and realizing the momentum that we create for the previous 11 months doesn't evaporate in a day. It requires our energy and focus, and it requires us to, as your analogy of the boat, you're investing your $100,000, but you better have $100,000 in the background getting ready to fill in the energy so that you're ready for all of it. We got to hear about a couple great tools that we'll definitely bring on to at least let people see what they're about, and to also know that there are lots of ways to state shift that don't require that, but they are amazing tools if you are particularly challenged to be honest with yourself, you know, to be able to sit in your own space and acknowledge where you truly are. This just helps you to get there from here, as do all the tools. So, a powerful conversation in how to use energy, how we use energy to create change, and how momentum affects us. And it's just been a great conversation. We would love to hear from you guys. We'd love your feedback. Please check out our Facebook page. Facebook page and YouTube page, Adventures in Truth Podcast. Jeff, what would you like to bring to close us today?
Yeah, I think you got it, Jim. You got our plugs in of where people can find us. It would be nice to hear from some folks and get some feedback on, you know, is this information helpful, interesting? Just we know that there are people out there listening. Would be good to hear from. And, you know, even some ideas of with regard to truth, how we apply this back to truth, not just interesting stuff to talk about, and keep us on track. That's about it.
Fantastic. As always, until a pleasure to spend time with you, my friend.
Yeah, likewise. Same here. Good stuff.
Always good stuff. So until next time, y'all, thanks for joining Adventures in Truth Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.